You're listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
You said that you missed Depeche Mode because you were watching the news.
I didn't miss Depeche Mode.
I wouldn't say
nobody
I missed
Depeche Mode.
Between those two, I would rather see Muse.
I'm not a huge Depeche Mode. It's really cool how our friend Jason really loves Depeche Mode.
He is.
It's cute.
You know what, though?
His husband likes Depeche Mode, too.
He's been grandfathered in, as I was telling Katie. Like, he got into Depeche Mode when he was young, and I think had he been exposed to them later in life, maybe he wouldn't be such a big fan.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a long history with Depeche Mode.
And a huge vagina.
I think it's the same thing with The Cure.
And they were playing there too.
Yeah, there's a window where you either get into them or you move on and grow up and
I was in the former.
Sex.
I was in
maybe some sex.
Not in that order.
Right.
I find it very funny that we're talking about like having sex on a Star Wars podcast.
Yeah, exactly. It's a foreign concept to our listeners.
Can you believe we finally got to this third one?
I couldn't even remember that we recorded episodes.
It's like a month and a half. For people listening, they're not going to notice any kind of length of time. It's been a month and a half since like the recording of episode 2 of this podcast series and right now. So here we are. The third episode of our Star Wars special, our little retrospective. What would you call it? Retrospective or just an
anthology is what I would call it.
Yeah, that sounds good. It makes it sound a lot more important. A trilogy. and so the first episode, obviously, we talked about the original trilogy. Second episode, talked about the prequel trilogy. Both of those, we were joined by Walt. Tonight, Joel and I are joined by Jeff Dale, our resident Star Wars Expanded Universe expert.
Hello.
Jeff and I went to high school together.
True story.
We were like in theater classes together.
Pretty much. All the classes that pretty girls didn't like.
He's right, though. He's absolutely right. And so it gave us time to brush up on our Star Wars and geekdom. No, but, you know, I went out and put my feelers out. I was like, who knows about the expanded universe? Because I really want to explore that. And I've read several of the books, but not enough to call myself any kind of expert whatsoever. And an expert might be a strong word, but I really don't have a strong knowledge of the expanded universe. And then Jeff was like, oh, yeah, I've read. Are you talking about New Jedi Order? Are you talking about this, that? I was like, I'm talking about all of it, man. Bring it. Bring whatever knowledge that you've got. So whenever you've got something to add in, Joel, feel free to jump in.
Will do.
But I'm going to just set you up and kind of let you go nuts, Jeff. So all I remember as far as expanded universe goes, I mean, of course, we had Shadows of the Empire, which they, you know, expanded universe, even though it takes place between Empire and Jedi.
Right.
Which was an excellent book by Steve Perry. Are you aware of the story of this one, Joel?
I do know that. My brother actually read that one. So I saw that book lying around and was tempted to pick it up because of the Star Wars logo.
Uh-huh.
And then I just masturbated instead.
It's a great read. It's not the first of the books. Oh, my God.
I was wondering why you just glossed over that.
Because I'm excited about Star Wars, so I'm like completely ignoring what you're saying. I'm like, I'm going to ask you questions, but I really don't care what the answer is.
So, like a pro.
Just like our personal life.
It's not true.
I know. Go ahead.
So it wasn't the first book to come out. It actually came out a while into the, you know, the Timothy Zahn and I think Dave Cockrum wrote one.
Mm-hmm.
This one was the first one that enjoyed a lot of commercial success because they had made a computer game about it.
Mm-hmm.
They made a CD soundtrack for the book.
Yes.
So you go through, read it, and get like all the themes and stuff. It was a good read. It wasn't bad. It had a lot of that energy of the Star Wars movies. It was all about the hunt for Han Solo, you know, hunting down Boba Fett to try to get Han Solo and then kind of stumbling across this Black Sun organization that was, you know, creating, what were they called? What was the Skyhook? I think it was called the Skyhook.
Yeah. There you go.
And then, like, in the end, it turned into, like, Prince Zizor's forces versus the Empire. Like, the Rebellion and the Empire had, like, this unofficial truce to take out Zizor. And then, you know, they went their separate ways. Really excellent ending.
I didn't read the book, just to interject, but I did have the soundtrack that you mentioned, and I had the video game, the N64 game that they made based off of it.
Which was great. It was a great game.
Absolutely.
It gave you a lot of feeling for, you know, the Star Wars universe that you didn't quite have, at, you know, in games at that time. Fighting, you know, battling TIE fighters and things like that. There are a few games that... you know, Rebel Assault, that kind of gave you the feel for it. But this one really was the first game that really felt like you were immersed in the Star Wars universe.
Of course, I had that John Williams score in it, too, and that always helps.
Yeah, well, it took some of that John Williams score, but mostly it was scored by Joel McNeely.
That's right.
Which I'll take. It's the CD I still have. Well, I'll throw it in. That final battle, it's a great theme.
It's a great track. And I always said, you know, because John Williams is pushing, I think he just had his 80th birthday. And for episodes 7, 8, and 9, they've signed him to do the scores for 7, 8, 9. And I'm like, you better start making those movies. You better start coming up with themes in advance because this motherfucker's going to kick off before he'll never see episode 9.
I bet you anything that John Williams has, like just a collection of music that he hasn't even released
I have a theory that he's not even scoring his own films anymore. He's got a team underneath him like Hans Zimmer does. And like he's farming out.
I have a feeling he's not even alive anymore. They're just CG John Williams.
His animatronics.
Exactly.
It's either that. Or this dude, Joel McNeely, which is the point I was getting to, he does such a good John Williams, I don't want to say impersonation, but captures kind of that feel.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair to say that.
And is able to kind of take the themes Williams came up with and make his own themes, but make them feel like they're in the same universe.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if John Williams kicks the bucket prematurely, get Joel McNeely on the line to score these 7, 8, and 9 films.
Do you think you know what? We'll get to this a little bit later.
That's a whole other episode.
Yeah. But do you think that 7, 8, and 9 would suffer if you got someone like Hans Zimmer to come in and score them instead?
Having just seen Man of Steel, that was scored by Hans Zimmer.
Hans Zimmer scored everything in the past year.
He really has. It's like which is why I'm saying it's not him. He has a look into it. He has a whole team of like interns that actually do the scoring for him.
And honestly, I have to say, like the Man of Steel soundtrack isn't so much a score; it's more just tones.
It's some tones, and it's a lot of drums. He's got like a big drum choir going on. And there is actually a really good track and some good themes, but not like, you know, there's nothing on par with the John Williams, you know.
Yeah. Do you think that they should, you know, this is a completely different discussion.
We're not even talking about Star Wars anymore.
I want to go into this for a second. Right. You know, don't you think they should have at least had that old John Williams score somewhere in the movie?
You say that, but they did that with Superman Returns, the Bryan Singer abortion.
But
and
that wasn't,
it didn't save
wasn't
that film.
It wasn't the soundtrack's fault that movie sucked. It was the writing and it was the direction.
No, but it just goes to show the soundtrack does not a Superman movie make. Much as we find out with the Star Wars universe with episodes 1, 2, and 3.
Way to bring it back.
Look at that segue, my folks.
That was really good. So, okay, so we go into Timothy Zahn, who writes the first official, not counting Splinter of the Mind's Eye, the first official expanded universe book. and it was Heir to the Empire, and it opens up with the final vision that Luke Skywalker has of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Ooh.
And I can't remember what it was that Obi-Wan says, but it's the final message, and then Obi-Wan disappears forever, leaving Luke to try to pick up the remnants and reestablish the Jedi. And so that's kind of where this story starts off, where Luke, I guess what, catches word that there's a old Jedi master still alive somewhere, that Jorce Sabuth or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's one of the problems with these Star Wars books. You have no fucking idea how anything is pronounced.
Yeah. I was going to say, I've always called it Zizor, but, you know.
Yeah.
Prince Zizor, but. That's one of the things about the trilogy is that a lot of the names, even though they're a little funky, still are pronounceable, and you know, you they feel like a real name. Whereas the expanded universe, they get a little crazy with the apostrophes and
a lot
the,
of Z's, and X's.
Big fans of those. With the Thrawn trilogy, that was the first that was really really took the stories and created a basis for the canon for the expanded universe that turned out to be a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah.
The nice thing was in subsequent books, when you went to read it, you didn't go, oh, I picked up this book, and wait, Han and Leia never got married, but in this one they did.
Mm-hmm.
The bad thing is if you're going in order, If you happen to hit a bad author, and there's a few of them.
There are.
Yeah. Then you're stuck plotting through a bad book because you don't want to miss plot points that will affect future stories.
Mm-hmm. I hate to sound sexist, but it was my experience in reading some of these Star Wars Expanded Universe books that the female authors didn't quite get it as well as a lot of the male authors did.
That doesn't surprise me.
Barbara Hambly.
Barbara Hambly completely.
I'd say one notable exception was A.C. Crispin, who wrote the Han Solo trilogy.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It was exceptional, and I got to pull my sexist card out in that originally when I read the trilogy and saw the name A.C. Crispin, I naturally assumed it was a guy, and then when I found out it was a woman, I was blown away.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't have been, you know, but
because we're sexist nerds.
Because we're, you know, sexist nerds. And at that point, it was like I pretty much want her to write anything non-guy related, mm-hmm. you know, not any author that's going to be female. I want it to be her.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm intrigued by this. What were some of the cues, or what didn't you like? Did like Chewbacca and Han Solo start talking about their feelings?
Well, it was. I'll give you that. Like there were. It was like you explored too much of like the Han Solo Leia, like to use the parlance of our times, shit got a little too real sometimes between Han and Leia when it was the female
authors. Blow something up.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, it would lack some of that fantasy, fairy tale adventure that, you know, Han Solo didn't quite have that swashbuckling edge to him. Mm. And I get, you know, once Jedi was done, him and Leia were a thing. And I like that there were a couple of authors that explored, like, well, even though they intended on being together, like there were a couple of stories where Princess Leia maybe becoming betrothed to somebody else may have helped the alliance.
Mm.
And so there were times where she almost married somebody else, like some other counselor, to help the rebellion, to help the New Republic. And so those were some interesting themes. But the overall, if we were to just kind of look at everything in a broad spectrum kind of way for the expanded universe before New Jedi Order is rebuilding the Republic and just all the problems that can you think that there's a lot of you know a lot of shit gets bogged down in political shit in the prequel trilogy. There's a lot of that in the novels.
Mm.
And I don't know if maybe Lucas was like, well, that's what the kids are enjoying reading in these books. Let's put these in the movies. But you know, and Jeff, you feel free to jump in because I'm just kind of going off of shooting from the hip, as they say.
Yeah.
It seemed like it was all about trying to build up the New Republic and also Luke Skywalker rebuilding the Jedi Academy. And in the Thrawn trilogy, that's when we first meet up with Mara Jade.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Who was the Emperor's hand.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear all these stories about how she was the assassin. And in fact, that she was in Jabba's palace when Leia was taken prisoner and Luke went to save Han. And she was like this close to assassinating Luke Skywalker, but then they ended up taking the sail barges out to the Dune Sea.
Spoiler alert!
Interesting.
and so eventually Luke and Mara find each other, and a love blossoms over the course of many books. A love blossoms. Han Solo marries Leia. Luke marries Mara Jade. They have children.
Cats and dogs living together.
Mass hysteria. So. The kids, who were Leia and Han's kids? Like
Leia and Han had three kids. Mm-hmm. There was Jason, Jaina, and Anakin. Jason and Jaina were twins. I don't know how much I should tell.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
All right.
I'll never read these. So
Jason turns to the dark side and becomes the big baddie.
The new Sith Lord.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he basically causes Chewbacca to die. Yeah, he's all sorts of bad guy.
Fucker. It's your kids, Luke. Something's got to be done about your kids.
So
no, but wait a minute. That wasn't his fault. Like, that was to cause Chewbacca. See, I didn't read much after Vector Prime.
Right.
Once Vector Prime happened, I read that and I was like, oh, I don't like. In the book, at least what I remember reading in Vector Prime, there's a planet that's falling apart. It's like self-destructing. Mm-hmm. And the Falcon's getting ready to take off. And I think it's Anakin that's still on the planet.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And so Chewbacca throws Anakin on the ship but then stays behind on the planet and dies.
Yeah.
a heroic ending, an ending that made a lot of Star Wars fans sad.
That's fitting.
Made me sad until I met Peter Mayhew. And then I was like, wow, you're kind of a rude bastard. I'm kind of glad they killed your character off. Yeah.
That wasn't my impression.
There's a rule. You never meet your heroes. You're always going to be wildly disappointed.
What did he do? And I got to know.
He was kind of rude. Interesting. And I've heard from a lot of people, like, they meet him at cons. They're like, oh, no, he's really sweet, really nice.
I thought he was.
Well, many years ago, when we were up on the 12th floor of this building that we're in right now, mm-hmm. we had Peter Mayhew up here, and I was going nuts. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I'm going to meet fucking Chewbacca? This is amazing. So we have him in, and he's pushing some weird Bigfoot movie he was going
to
make.
I seem to remember that.
Yeah, that I guess never got done. But we had him up.
Wait, from Chewbacca to Bigfoot?
To Bigfoot. It's a stretch.
It's a lot of range there. I don't know.
He got typecast.
Yeah.
So we had him up. We interviewed him for, and not just for like about 5 minutes. We had him on for half the morning show.
Oh. Mm.
And then afterwards, we were like, hey, you know, take some pictures. Yeah, absolutely. He took some pictures. And then, do you mind? I brought my Star Wars DVD. I was like, do you mind? Could you sign this? No.
That's where he drew the line, huh?
I was like, wow, what? No, I just don't feel comfortable doing that.
Huh. That's a Shaq move.
I was like, why not? That's, well, because I make people pay. To sign autographs.
Now, that's true.
We just gave you free airtime to push your movie that never got fucking released. How much airtime? Let's talk about advertising. You know, in essence, you got about a couple hundred dollars worth of advertising on the show.
Okay.
In return, you're not going to sign a DVD. It's not worth it. That's not a worthy trade-off.
He may have been trying to be nice and not, you know, point out your nerd boner. Well, that's what might have been actually making him uncomfortable.
My nerd boner is what's still putting food on his table.
That's a lovely mental image I have right now. Literally your boner.
Someone needs to make a cartoon of that.
Look, you know, could I be overreacting about it a little bit?
No.
Maybe. Maybe I am. I'm not too big to admit that.
I hear you.
Yeah, no, that's a dick move.
Yeah. My first inclination is like, well, you're right. I've seen him at the conventions. Like, that's how he makes his money. I'm sure he's getting some residual checks from all those Star Wars Blu-rays that are being sold as well. But he goes out, he makes appearances, and it's like, what, $20 a pop? So on that end, I'm like, okay, I see your point. But on the other hand, it's $20 a pop.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so he's going to lose $20 by signing your fucking DVD.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I can. All right.
So
you won me over.
Thank you,
Peter Mayhew.
Here we go. Yes. We're going to make the t-shirts.
Fuck Peter Mayhew.
So you'll have to, now you're going to have to, going to have to tell me what happens in Vector Prime.
Okay.
Because I know,
hold on.
I know, Chewie, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I just want to get the kid's name straight. So there's Anakin. He's not really a junior, but he's Anakin.
Yeah,
two.
He's Anakin. And then Jason and Jaina.
Okay.
Yeah.
They are twins.
Okay.
Jason is the one who goes over the dark side,
mm-hmm.
Becomes incumbent upon his twin sister to take him down.
Ooh.
Now, the way that she gets help taking him down is being trained by Boba Fett.
Ooh. What?
Yeah. So in the New Republic, there's a lot of alliances that one would not have thought possible, but it was pretty interesting. She helped him out. Trying to remember which book. I'm blanking.
So while you're thinking about that,
sure.
At least in the course of the stories that I read, Jason and Anakin got killed. Like, eventually they died.
Right.
So Anakin, he died. Did he ever come back?
I don't believe so.
But Jason, he was thought to have been dead, ends up becoming Sith Lord.
Right.
That's pretty exciting. Yeah. I had only heard, like, there was, like, the thing about, like, I'd seen, I think, what was it? It was on a, like, geeksaresexy.com. They did a family tree of Star Wars.
Right.
And I saw his picture and then, like, Darth something, and I was like, wait, what?
So
that's all. I've never read it. I had no idea what happened there. I didn't know it was up to, you know, then it was like a Jaina Jason kind of showdown.
Yeah.
And I know Luke and Mara had a son named Ben.
Girl Ben Kenobi.
And I have no idea what happened with that kid. I don't know what's going on with their kid.
Yeah, actually, that goes beyond the scope of my leadership. Yeah, so we have now come to the part where I'm no longer used.
The edge of the
Yeah. Let's talk about comics and video games.
Let's talk about the Yuuzhan Vong.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's actually another part.
I saw them at ACL, by the way. Great band. Much better live.
Well, you know, they were better before they got big.
That's right. Hipsters.
Yeah.
The Yuuzhan Vong were brought in to the Star Wars Expanded Universe. I brought you in to tell us about these things.
I know. I'm so sorry.
You underestimated your knowledge.
Yeah. No, it's actually that a lot of it is it's been a while since I've read it. And it's like, oh, yeah, no, no, wait. No, yeah, okay.
So there are this alien race that comes from the edge of the galaxy.
Okay.
And they come in, and they're all flying these organic animals as ships, like they're
all like Avatar,
in
space.
Oh God,
sorry,
Avatar isn't Avatar already in space? Okay, so
aren't we all in space? When you think about it,
this is true.
We're on a big blue
there are these organic vehicles mm-hmm. that they're flying, and they're immune to force powers,
mm.
and so they come in and basically start laying waste to the entire universe.
Yep,
and it effectively took the Republic. And it made like characters like Han and Luke and Leia, like suddenly they were the rebellion again.
Mm.
They were fighting against these things that were bigger than them. But they were also fucking with the Empire. So you had, you know, the remnants of the Empire were also kind of teaming up with the rebellion.
Yeah, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah. And so that's kind of how that planet got destroyed. It was a result of the Yuuzhan Vong attack. And I can't remember what else they did. I think they had some kind of like brainwashing technology stuff.
Wow. Interesting.
They were hunting down Jedi. They were trying to hunt down the rest of the Jedi, and like they were the Achilles heel for Luke. And I never read any further. I never read what the resolution was for all that. I have no idea how it all ended, if it all ended.
That's actually where a lot of people who were following the books fell off.
Uh-huh.
Mm. From what I understand, another friend of mine had been cranking through the books, and he hit about third book of the Yuuzhan Vong, and he was like, I don't know where it's going to end. I'm done. I'm out of steam.
It became uninteresting. It wasn't fun to keep up with the story anymore.
Yeah.
It felt like the evolution that had taken place over the course of the novels that we had read. It just kind of went away.
They just reverted back to where the scrappy rebels again.
Exactly. Now, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I get that. But there's only so many times you can do that.
Right. And
not frustrating your audience.
Well, instead of doing what they had done with like the X-Wing books or the Rogue Squadron books, mm-hmm. rather, you know, where you had another like an offshoot of stories of what was going on while the main storyline was happening, you could kind of follow what was going on with Rogue Squadron. And those were some really fun books to read as mm-hmm. well. And if you weren't into that, you wanted something a little more, short story-ish, you had your Tales from the Mos Eisley Cantina, Tales from Jabba's Palace, Tales of the Bounty Hunters. Mm-hmm. Those were fun. You had the Bounty Hunter trilogy, which explains how Boba Fett came back.
I heard you say that. I didn't realize he was ever... Because you said that.
Oh,
like Boba Fett trades him. Like, dead, but I want to seem stupid.
Apparently, Boba Fett gave the Sarlacc a bit of indigestion.
Yeah.
He made his way out of there.
That suit of armor.
Yeah, I think that was one of those George Lucas short-sightedness things where they
absolutely.
Go, oh, yeah, he's a really awesome character. We should not have killed him off.
Yeah, we could do something with him. And they did. They ended up using – and it was cool. They utilized a lot of like the bounty hunters you got to see in Empire Strikes Back, Zuckuss and Dengar and IG-88. Like they all kind of played – they played a part.
Bosk,
yeah. And they all played a part in this bounty hunter trilogy where Dengar pulled – you know, he finds the body of Boba Fett in the desert and basically kind of nurses him back to health and is like, hey, man. You know, there's something about this, blah, blah, blah. Time to get in the Slave One. Let's mount up and
those bounty hunters are a nice bunch, aren't they?
Well, you know, they do work together. Sometimes you got to, you know, that's how you got to take someone down.
That's true.
Another interesting story, involved with the bounty hunters. Dengar had teamed up with Boba Fett in order to track down an imposter Boba Fett called Jodo Cast.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're all clones, so it's hard to tell them apart.
Yeah, pretty much. He basically got a hold of some Mandalorian armor, and he was your cut rate bounty hunter, as it were. You know, figuring that the armor would get people to surrender. You know, knowing Boba Fett's reputation, and Boba Fett's not exactly cool with that sort of thing. And
this isn't a Dread Pirate Roberts sort of thing.
Right, exactly.
Give me the Mandalorian armor.
Yeah, so he sets up a trap with the help of Dengar he actually hires Jodo Cast to find him, and then Jodo Cast didn't fare so well in that round.
No, and it, if you want to play out your own version of that battle, if you get the Star Wars game for PS1 called Masters of Teras Kasi, Jodo Cast is an unlockable character in it.
Nice.
It's pretty cool. It wasn't one of the best fighters. It wasn't one of the best 3D fighters. And I think we've talked about it on the video game podcast.
I remember that.
But it's passable. It's a serviceable fighter. It's fun to play with friends. But it really does have like an expansive selection of characters that you can use to play from. And interesting that they pull from a few of the expanded universe characters. You got your Jodo Cast. You've got your Mara Jade that you can use. And, you know, your regular Star Wars fan who doesn't read the books, they're not going to know who the fuck Mara Jade is.
Right.
So they're going to play through the game and be like, who the hell is this chick? Why does she have a lightsaber? But your fans are going nuts, going, I can't believe they put her in there. That's pretty badass.
I'm trying to think of another world, another universe in sci-fi where the offshoots have had such an influence on like the main canon. I mean, you talk about the prequels, you can say what you will about them, but a lot of the characters, or at least some things, were inspired by the books, if I'm not mistaken, and some of this expanded universe stuff.
Yeah.
And you just don't really see that in any other.
No, I'm trying to think. I really can't think of anything else.
Not
where
even
you
really
would
like Star Trek.
Star Trek, no.
I mean, they're off the rails now.
But Star Trek has so much. Like they had so much in TV and film before they even went for any kind of books, any kind of novelizations.
True.
And even then, like the first round novelizations for Star Trek were like based on episodes of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was kind of feeding into itself already. Yeah, exactly. It was kind of feeding into itself already, whereas Star Wars, it kind of gave you a little bit more room to play with, especially at the time when they first started the books. There was no prequel trilogy yet.
Yeah.
You know, so you kind of, especially with in the case of Timothy Zahn, he kind of had carte blanche to play with whatever the hell he wanted to play with. And ironically, I'll only come back to books that he writes. If they're Timothy Zahn books, I'm in, man. They're
almost sanctioned by
Lucas. He seems to be the only author. And you know what? You might disagree with me, Jeff, but he seems to be the only author that when you read them, you hear the score in your head, and you hear the voices of these characters. He captures them perfectly. He captures the feel. You can almost see, the wipes and the fades, just like Lucas, from scene to scene in the books.
Cool.
He seems to get it. And what I love about his anniversary edition of the Heir to the Empire book, the audiobook, it plays out more like a radio drama than it does an actual book.
I love when they do that.
Yes. Yeah. So it's got all the sound effects.
Nice.
It's got, you know, the different actors doing the voices for all the different characters. It's gorgeous. It's great to listen to. Timothy Zahn, his Thrawn trilogy, he had a couple of books where he revisited Thrawn, the Thrawn saga or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then
duology.
Yeah, yeah. didn't he write Scoundrels? Was that him?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Not sure.
And then I know he wrote just recently another book about Mara Jade that took place, I think, like between A New Hope and an Empire. Like he was trying to kind of capitalize on that time frame as well.
Right.
I haven't read it yet.
Smart.
I've got two or three books now that he's just recently released. I just haven't gotten to them. I'm still suffering trying to get through the last Game of Thrones book.
Oh.
that motherfucker.
Well, we'll catch up with you in about 9 months.
I know,
exactly.
Right?
He's a Bible.
Once all your favorite characters are dead.
Exactly. You know what? It's not even so much that. It's not that they're big books. It's that he's such a bore to read.
Really?
Yeah. What's his name? Martin. Not fun. He's not fun. And the only reason that you stick with it now is because of what? I've read four books. I may as well read this fifth one.
Or you could just watch the TV show. I hear it's pretty good.
But it's all right. It's all right.
All right. All right.
So we got the we've explored the expanded universe in the books.
Sure.
Actually, I have one more question.
Go ahead.
Because we were talking about how the books kind of affected the new trilogy. Do you think we're going to see more of this? The touch from the expanded universe affect episodes 7, 8, and 9? I mean, it sounds like they've already laid out Luke Skywalker's future in these novels. And since 7, 8, 9 are supposed to pick up with him.
Well, it's funny you should ask that.
Oh, really?
Because once Disney purchased the brand, they basically said everything that was canon from the books and expanded universe no longer applies.
Uh-huh.
So There was a lot of nerd rage there.
You have to assume that with J.J. Abrams, because he did the exact same thing with the Star Trek universe.
Exactly.
He kind of flipped it and started his own. Now, he used time travel as a crutch. I don't think you're going to be able to get away with that.
But there wasn't an established, expanded, you know, canon.
Also true. Except for the Spock... Kirk gay erotica.
Oh my gosh!
Any Star Wars gay erotica?
It's my favorite. You know, I'm sure there is, man. It's the rule.
We're not going to talk about that.
What's it called? Rule 34. If it exists, there is porn of it. Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, no, I didn't make it up. That's somebody made that up. That's an actual thing.
Sure. I believe it.
So
no 7, 8, 9. No kids. Little Anakin.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, honestly, if I were J.J. Abrams, I wouldn't be sitting here. no, I would look at what worked in the expanded universe, what worked well and what didn't. Mm-hmm. So I would probably work with those guidelines, not necessarily holding true to that. But I mean, I think pretty much everybody wants Han and Leia to be married. And,
oh yeah, yeah. You know, there's some
things
babies
you can't.
And,
yeah. Yeah.
We may not want to see that on film now. Carrie Fisher?
Yeah. You know, we were actually my fiance and I just watched Blues Brothers, and we were looking at Carrie Fisher going, oh man, she's
it's her prime.
Yeah, but you know, the
she was
thing
coked up the entire time.
Yeah, well,
though,
yeah, come on, no. You know? but yeah, we were just saying, you know, Carrie Fisher's got to sit there and go, at least I'm not Kathleen Turner.
People think she's a man.
Well,
so
they might not be wrong.
Here's my thing. I don't mind if they allude to it. Like, I would have much rather that J.J. Abrams come in and that these new Star Wars movies take place like 100 years or so
right
after what we've seen.
No characters
I don't want to see Luke. I don't want to see Han. I don't want to see Leia.
Right.
We could see C-3PO and R2. Mm-hmm. They're sure. Droids. They could be around. And you know what? I've always kind of gotten the impression, even from the original trilogy, that we are seeing the Star Wars saga through their eyes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's why they exist in every one of the movies, even the prequels,
right,
because we're seeing the story through their eyes. They're the chorus. If it was a Shakespearean show, right, they are the chorus.
You bring up a good point, you know, because one of the worries about people writing for Star Wars is, you know, the feeling like I got to have Han, I got to have Luke, I got to have Leia, or else it's not a Star Wars, mm-hmm, you know, story. But I think one video game that took that theory and smashed it to the ground was Knights of the Old Republic.
Thank you very much.
You know, it felt like Star Wars, but it didn't feel like, oh, this is the Han character, this is the Luke character.
But it kind of did. You know, we still kind of had that. Like, we had the pilot character, you know, Karth. I think
right.
That was his name.
Yeah.
But he wasn't like scoundrelly and like reckless.
No, yeah, he was much more of a war-weary veteran. Mm-hmm. You know, there were elements of him that were like Han, but for the most part he was
a Malcolm Reynolds.
Yeah,
from Serenity.
He was, for the most part. He was a little more cautious. But no,
more by the book,
we've
too.
We've talked about the Knights of the Old Republic. Knights of the Old Republic was fantastic.
Yeah.
And just down to just the very basic elements of it, the storytelling elements, how they just kind of deliberately fed you just enough of what you needed to know. Now, we've spoiled it before on here, so there's no worries about that. But when you get to that reveal in the game, God bless it. I didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
And so it had just as much of an effect on me as when Vader told Luke, I am your father.
Yeah.
I was just as impressed by this game when I was like, I'm what? Are you kidding me? This is ridiculous. If you have not played Knights of the Old Republic, and you should get
it. Stop listening and just run out and pick it up.
It's on the iPad now. You can get it for about, I think, like $5-6.
Really?
A steal.
Yeah. Huh. So it's definitely worth playing. Wonderful story. You don't have to play Knights 2, but definitely the first Knights of the Old Republic.
You know, and the thing about Knights 2 was that it had such potential because you could see where the story was going.
Yeah.
But it felt rushed, and it, you know, there were certain things that it, in comparison, it really paled to the original. But you know, I was wanting it so badly to be on its own merit is a fantastic game.
Yeah. It's
but
just
again,
when you follow it up, you're following one of the greatest game stories of all time.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to do. But no, yeah, you're right. It's and that's kind of how I feel about the prequel trilogy, is that, you know, he was trying to tell this Star Wars story, and there are things that, whether George Lucas even realizes it or not, there are things that are Star Wars that he did not put in there. You know, and I've talked about this over and over again, that Star Wars is a fairy tale.
Yeah.
And what we got in the prequel trilogy, that wasn't a fairy tale.
No.
We were missing, you know, the reckless hero. And he tried too hard to make Anakin all those things at once.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we didn't need that. And now, I don't know if you guys have seen, there's a video online where it's like some dude, God, I can't remember what the title of it is, but basically it's this guy fixes the Star Wars prequels.
Yeah.
And
excellent.
But he talks about
Zero Jar Jar?
Yes.
Zero Jar Jar. Well, Zero Jar Jar, and that, like, while the Clone Wars are going on, that Anakin Skywalker befriends a very cocky pilot named Owen Lars. And that Owen is kind of the substitute Han character in these movies.
Oh, I like
and
that
they even set up kind of a weird love triangle between Padme, Owen, and Anakin that kind of creates this rift between them, and also makes Owen more of a relevant character.
Yeah.
You know, to build up to what we see in episode 4, mm-hmm. where we see Owen who's like
that
Obi-Wan Kenobi's just a crazy old man, you know, like he knows the truth.
Interesting.
But he doesn't want Luke to, you know.
That's a great idea.
It is. Oh, I need to figure out what that link is and send it to you because this guy really comes up with some great explanations and great theories on how you could have made these prequel stories better and still fit the spirit of what we saw in the original movies.
I think the main thing with George Lucas is he is great as long as he's got someone there to collaborate with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Someone to
tell him no. You know, you think of Indiana Jones. It's a great story, but I really feel like it was Steven Spielberg that made that movie sing.
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
And if you've ever read the original script for Star Wars, boy.
Yeah.
Man, well, that thing is, you know, they've released a comic based on that script, mm-hmm. and I've read the first two issues, and, you know.
It's a slow movie.
It's like an hour before they even get
it's slow reading, and what feels familiar is the bad stuff. Uh-huh. You know, it feels like the prequels a lot, and it's like, wow, this guy, oh man, he cannot tell a story that's not plotting,
right.
And you know, and I feel that once, you know, as long as he's got someone there to go, I think this idea sucks. You know, then he can go back to the drawing board.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not going to be Rick McCallum.
No, it's not. No, yeah. He's the ultimate yes man, and we've talked about that. You know, Lucas originally wanted to put fuzzy dice on the Millennium Falcon. He wanted to put fuzzy dice in the cockpit of the Falcon.
Yeah.
And it was, I don't know if it was Kasdan, who the hell was it? But someone said, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
And thank God for that. But then, you know, when he has his own way, what do we get? We get an American graffiti style diner in episode two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What the fuck is that all about? You know, the cool thing about the original Star Wars trilogy was we got familiar style stuff like the cantina. Mm-hmm. We're familiar with cantinas, with bars, but it was this dirty but like otherworldly kind of bar. That's what was fun about Star Wars, was seeing things that we'd never seen before. I've seen diners. I've seen a shitload of diners. I don't need to see it in fucking Star Wars. Show me something a little bit more exciting. But that's all he did. I mean, fuck. Episode 2 had a diner, a douchey bar, and a horrible Coliseum bit.
Yeah, yeah.
It was shit we've seen before. We've seen that before.
Well, we had to have the, you know, sexy outfit like we had land slave outfits.
I do appreciate that.
Yeah, I'll applaud that. Yes, I'm fine with that part.
I don't know if I told you about this. When I went to the Star Wars weekends at Disney, and they did the big dance-off thing at the end of the night.
Oh, uh-huh.
And how you got the chicks that come out, and like there's the one chick dressed in the slave Leia outfit and the other one in the white Padme bit.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh my God. And they're like dancing sexy. I'm like, this is Disney, and I am incredibly turned on.
I had a dream like this once.
Wow, you know,
show my lightsaber.
I will set aside the fact that I've got complete jealousy that that over at Orlando they have the Star Wars weekends, and over at Disneyland we've got Jack.
Yeah, I'm really surprised that like closer to Hollywood they don't have the Star Wars weekends.
Yeah, yeah, that's something that people in Anaheim have been screaming about for years, and I had been one of those vocal people.
He's, in fact, you know, he's wearing a Star Tours T-shirt right now.
I noticed that.
And he
it's
and
a
his
cast member exclusive, by the way.
Oh, that's fancy.
That's yeah. cool. He and his fiance brought me back a Star Tours T-shirt.
Awesome. Where's mine, Jeff? Back. I'm a medium, by the way.
Oh, okay. All right.
Just FYI. Yeah, okay.
You can hear dead people. You don't look anything like Patricia Arquette.
There's a gray streak.
So now we've explored the books. We've explored
some video games.
Some video games. But there was a huge boom with the Star Wars video games when it came to TIE Fighter. Mm. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Oh, yeah.
And TIE Fighter kind of created its own story, its own little alternate timeline thing for the player, you know, where you got to experience the story of the Star Wars saga from the point of view of a TIE Fighter pilot. Mm. And it was entertaining as hell. One of the best, I mean, and I know it's probably more nostalgia speaking right now, but one of the best shooters, like flight sim shooters that I've ever played.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing is cooler than you embark on a mission and there's one where like Vader goes, "I'll be flying with you on this mission." It's amazing. You know, you're Vader's wingman and you're watching him just go off and do his thing and you're like, okay. And you can like, you know, in
don't
the game, you can,
don't mess up.
You can
don't
command your wingmen to do stuff. So it was really weird, like commanding Vader to go take this guy.
Awesome.
It was really fun. It was really fun. And so it started with that. And then they've explored so many different genres with Star Wars. I can't think of another property that suffered as much as Star Wars did trying to find its own video game identity.
Yeah.
For every Knights of the Old Republic that we had, there were complete fucking stinkers, like the Episode One game, which was – it was so horrible voice acting. It was ugly to look at. And you would think like the minds behind something like Star Wars, they could put something a little bit nicer together.
Well, they were busy building the pod racing game, which actually wasn't too bad.
Pod Racer was fun. You also had Jedi Power Battles.
See, I never played that one.
Jedi Power Battles was a two-player co-op, and it took place within the Episode One continuity, where basically you just took control of a couple of Jedi. You and a friend could be a couple of Jedi, and it was just a beat-em-up, kind of like Double Dragon with Jedi.
Nice.
So it was pretty cool. Nice little co-op kind of thing. It was what the Episode One game should have been, but unfortunately it was not. They did make a Mario Kart style game.
I've seen that one.
Yeah, which to its credit, not bad.
Not
for
bad.
What it was.
It's hard
it
to fuck those
bad.
Up though.
Yeah.
Yeah. The God, I'm trying to think. There was a
they got the Lego Star Wars.
Well, Lego Star Wars is one of the shining examples of using the property in the proper way.
I agree. All those Lego games.
No, well, not all of them.
No? Maybe not the Indiana Jones?
I would steer clear of Indiana Jones.
And the Harry Potters.
And the Harry Potters.
That's what I thought.
The Lego Batman.
Lego Batman's
a blast.
Insanely good. I think probably one of my favorites has got to be Lego Batman 1. Mm-hmm. Lego Pirates is even pretty fun. What you need to make a successful game like that, though, is characters with powers. And that's where Lego Indiana Jones fell flat. You know, it was all real. It was, you know, guns and whips. And, you know, the fun thing about Lego Star Wars was people could shoot lasers at you and you could deflect the laser bolts.
Mm-hmm.
Or Lego Batman, you had these characters with different powers. The powers, as far as Lego Indiana Jones was concerned, you had characters that were smart and had books. And they could solve puzzles. Like, that was
lame.
That was about as good as it got. It didn't expand too much further than that. But, yeah, Lego Star Wars.
How do you feel about the Angry Birds now having a Star Wars?
I enjoy it.
Yeah?
I enjoy it.
They just came out with a sequel, too, I think.
Yeah, and the sequel is all the prequel characters.
Oh.
So I haven't played it. I haven't felt the need, really, to get that one.
Right.
I really enjoy the first Angry Birds, though. Using the Luke lightsaber power or the Han power, whenever you launch the Han bird, he goes, "Yahoo!"
Nice.
It's cute. I don't play it all the time like I did when it first came out, but I still have it on my phone. I'll crack it out a little bit, play a few levels with it. It's cute. It's a cute use of the IP. Mm-hmm. I'm one of those people, I don't mind that. Like, a lot of people are like, "Oh, wow, this." When they make it cute, it's stupid. I don't like Ewoks because they're cute.
Yeah.
That's a good point. You know, a lot of people got upset with the merger of Disney and Star Wars.
Uh-huh.
Being that those are two of my favorite companies, yeah. I was dancing in the aisles. So, well, especially
like chocolate and peanut butter.
Yeah, especially because
really the newest thing that I'd seen come out about Star Wars was the new Star Tours ride at Disneyland. And I got to be honest, when it comes to making a Star Wars film, when it comes to either Disney or Lucas making that, I think I trust Disney more.
Exactly.
Because, you know, with John Lasseter running it, I mean, you know, I know that guy, you know, really ran Pixar into the ground and everything. But, you know, with him running a lot of those things, I see nothing but home runs coming coming from them. You know, he was able to take a failing second theme park in Anaheim and turn it into a destination. It used to be a joke that, you know, that when they built California Adventure, nobody wants to go to that park because, you know, it was better off as the parking lot. And now, you know, with the advent of Cars Land and some of the older, you know, harkening back to the old Hollywood of 1920s and, and things like that, it's turned into a destination where people want to go to that park.
That's awesome.
And, you know, to draw people away from Disneyland, that's no easy feat.
Right. I just had a friend of mine who was proposed to in the Dream Tower or whatever. What is it?
The Dream Suite?
The Dream Suite. Yeah, they had stayed. They went, I guess her fiance is a cast member.
Oh, uh-huh.
And they booked the Pirates of the Caribbean Suite, and I guess the Dream Suite is right above it.
Yeah.
And so they were able to go in it, and there's only three women ever proposed to in that room, and she's one of them.
Nice.
And she took a whole bunch of pictures of the inside. Wow. And was like, there's this, look at this, there's this. There's, you know, the shelf where there's Cinderella slippers or whatever, and they do tricks. And apparently her fiance had her look at that. He was like, oh, wow, look at what's that. And she was watching the slippers do their little tricks. And while she was doing that, he was taking out the ring and proposed to her.
Smooth motherfucker.
See, and the thing is, if you propose at Disneyland, you're not going to get turned down.
Yes.
I speak from experience.
Did you really? You did the same thing?
You know, I with my fiance, it had been a lifelong dream of hers to go to Disneyland. And since she had never been, I was like, come out and visit me in Anaheim and I'll take you. And
had she been to Disney World?
No.
None
of the Disney parks.
Oh my God, that poor child.
Yeah, I know. it was a wrong that I felt I needed to right.
Yes, and you're a good man.
Yeah, so I figured, you know, after things went well and we were together, I figured I want to propose, but I want to do it somewhere special. So I proposed by the castle.
That's awesome.
Nice. Yeah, it was, you know.
Well done.
The only bad thing is when I tell that story, you know, all the guys who, you know, are with girls and everything like that, you know, when they hear that story, they're like, yeah, he proposed to me, you know, by putting it in a, you know, box of macaroni or something like that.
And we were at the Jamba Juice.
Yeah, he goes, hey, you wanna? Yeah, yeah, all right. You know, so it's like, yeah, immediately they just throw some hate my way.
Thanks, asshole.
Yeah, I know. Trump card, sorry.
So getting back to Star Wars.
Sure.
Because we've gone on a Disney thing. But I agree with you. You know, just going through the Star Tours ride, you get all of that excitement and adventure that you love from Star Wars. Mm-hmm. In 5 minutes, you get a satisfactory experience that you won't get from 6 hours of movies that we just got like over the past 10 years.
Right.
And if you ever do get a chance to go, I mean, I recommend getting on it a few times because it's always different.
That's what I hear. Yeah, it's completely different.
Unfortunately, when I went, like
it was the same thing twice.
Four out of the 5 times I went, we did the pod race the first time.
Pod race, and what was the other planet?
The other planet was. I know we did the we went into the Death Star like 3 of those 5 times, and then the other 2, I can't remember what the second planet
was. It's
got
to be Endor, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it was Endor.
No?
No. Wow. I can't remember what it was.
I know there's one where you go to Naboo and you go underwater.
No, we didn't do that one.
Okay. There's one where I haven't recalled these. Okay. I've done the Death Star run, and I've done I'm forgetting the orders.
Like I
know my favorite was the favorite combination was Hoth, of course.
I didn't get to go to Hoth. I was so pissed that we didn't get to go to Hoth.
Missed
Is it just random?
Yeah, it's always randomized.
There's no, like, if you come back at 2 o'clock, we'll
No, it's always randomized, and it even, like, whatever the motivation for your adventure is different, too. I noticed, like, half the time it was we get stopped by a robot, an Imperial robot, and he's like, I'm looking for a spy, blah, 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 blah. And then other times it was Vader. And he's like, you have a rebel spy on your ship.
Ooh. The great thing is, for those of you about to go to a trip to Disneyland, and you get the robot that stops you. If you look in the foreground in the right, you'll see the Millennium Falcon is stopped, and you'll see that some stormtroopers are asking Han some questions.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
He's at the same time, and everybody is so focused on the robot in front of you that you don't see him just kind of act like, oh. And pulls out his blaster, starts blasting away, runs up the gangplank, and the Falcon just shoots out.
That's awesome.
And then you follow the Falcon out. It's incredible.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's
– Never checked in the background to see what was going
on. That's cool.
You know, it's the joy of having a year-long pass is that you, Sorry.
I really enjoyed it. Like I said, you know, we're doing the Death Star run when you end up in the asteroid field and you end up getting chased by Boba Fett.
Yeah.
For a few minutes. And it plays out a lot like, you know, in episode 2 where Jango Fett is chasing after Obi-Wan.
One of the few bright points.
That's a great sequence.
Well, the sound design.
The audio alone.
The sound design in that sequence is amazing.
Yeah.
And you get that same experience from that moment in the Star Tours ride.
Cool.
And then, you know, halfway through, you also, when you hit in the light speed, you get different people who are like, hey, you need to bring the spy here. Like, we got Admiral Ackbar, we got Yoda, we got Leia. Saying, you know, you need to bring the rebel spy to this location, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then you take off, and that's your halfway point, and then it takes you to that second planet.
The last one for – okay, I'm remembering that third planet.
Uh-huh.
It's the Wookiee planet.
Okay.
And I can't believe I've forgotten it because when I first started running Star Tours, I got the Wookiee planet every single time.
Oh, no.
It was a run of like 19 times. It was – unbelievable. And I told my friends they were lying when they said there were other places. I was like, you know what? No. I told some cast members, and one guy was nice enough to – I'd ridden it 4 times that day. I said, I'm sorry. I've ridden the ride 4 times. I keep going to the Wookiee planet. He goes, all right, here's a fast pass. He was really nice about it. He was like, I feel badly for you. Here you go. I get on and – yeah, I got the
Wookiee planet.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I got to be honest. I like Wookiees a lot less, you know. And now that I found out that Peter Mayhew's a raging dick.
Yep, that's right. The spy, like the rebel spy, when you get in there, they take a picture randomly of somebody who's sitting in the car, and that's who the rebel
spy
is. You know,
my fiance got it twice in a row.
I was never the spy. I wrote it 9 times.
Jesus.
I was never the spy. I was so pissed. Like I'd try to be like, I'd be like, ah, right here, whoever's looking, I want to be the spy so badly. And I'd have my camera ready, like maybe I'm going to be at this time. Maybe I'm going to be at this time. No. It was some stupid kid.
Some kids.
It's usually if they're gonna pick a guy, it's usually a boy, a little kid. Women, it's free for all.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Woo!
Yeah. Well, you know.
That was so. Joe showing his tits.
I showed my man boobs.
Yeah,
okay.
Seen better.
So what we've got in the we've got in the video games, you know, we have alternate stories that you can play through. Some stuff that kind of sticks to do some comics. You want to do some comics?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We've got a couple more minutes. Let's finish off on the comic
books. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm about to run roughshod on this.
Go for it.
There are some really good storylines that have come out. Obviously, they've redone the Thrawn trilogy that came out by Dark Horse.
They also did Dark Empire.
They did Dark Empire. There's one that I read that I'm not crazy about the artwork, but I think the storyline is fantastic. It's called Crimson Empire, and it's about one of the Imperial Guards. And he's betrayed by another Imperial Guard, so he kind of, through a confluence of situations, joins the sides of the rebels to get his revenge.
Oh, excellent.
And it's a great story. Also, I really like the series that they've just come out with for Dark Horse. It's basically taking Star Wars and telling the story in between A New Hope and Empire.
Oh, Shadows of Yavin.
Yeah.
Isn't that
yeah.
what it's called?
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's, I think there's some really great stories that are coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I always find that usually I like to wait a little while until it's all collected in the trade.
And, I agree.
You know, that way I can get it all in one fell swoop like a total nerd.
And I do the same thing with TV. I'd rather watch the whole season at once.
Chunk.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Binge watching. That's, you know, Breaking Bad. What?
Yep.
Yeah. So.
Did you ever read Infinities? The Star Wars Infinities
yes,
books?
Yes.
Really great. Joel, have you ever heard of these?
No.
Okay. So back in like the 70s and 80s, Marvel Comics had done a thing called What If, where they took, you know, some standard Marvel storylines and they were like, what if this happened instead? You know, what if Captain America was never unfrozen and he would never became one of the Avengers? How would the story have played out? Well, Star Wars Infinities kind of explores that with the Star Wars saga.
Ooh.
Like, what if, you know, Luke Skywalker died in the Battle of Yavin?
Holy shit.
You know, or what if they never rescued Princess Leia, or what if they never rescued Han Solo? I can't remember what all it was, but they did explore for each movie, for like Star Wars Infinities, Empire Strikes Back Infinities, and Return of the Jedi. They would explore different things. Like, what if Leia was the one that had to fight Vader at the end of Return of the Jedi?
That would be awesome.
They did this in the comic book series where they would explore those alternate storylines. Really fun.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. They've got those collected into trades.
Yeah, those are really well done. I think my only issue with that is I felt like because they crammed it into four issue miniseries, I felt like it was a little rushed.
Yeah,
just because I wanted to know more. Like, oh wow, that's an interesting take. You know, I really want to know how this turns out.
Yeah.
So
no, I agree with you. It would have been nice to see them given like, you know, give them about eight issues.
Yeah.
To flesh out each of like the alternate storylines. No, I agree with that. There's also, if you're kind of more into like humor books, Tag and Bink.
Tag and Bink, yes. You got to love that. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. You know, that's it told from a comedic standpoint of a couple of guys who are outside the main storyline, but they are intertwined in it, and hilarity ensues.
Are they robots? I don't know those characters.
No, they're just a couple of regular guys, and they bungle their way through the trilogy.
Nice.
And it's
always on the periphery.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, I don't want to spoil any of the gags, but
okay.
Well, I'll spoil one.
Yeah, do one.
You come to find out in Return of the Jedi that you know, when Mon Mothma talks about Manny Bothans, there's actually a character named Manny Bothans.
Manny Bothans died.
He died.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
So I just, when I read that, you know, I was like, that alone is worth the price of admission. But,
that's a great idea.
I've got the trade of it if you ever want to read it.
Yeah, I kind of do now.
It's fantastic.
So funny.
There's another series they're doing right now, too, called Agent of the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
It takes place before A New Hope. And it's basically a secret assassin that is set up by – it's kind of a merger of James Bond.
Oh, wow.
And in Star Wars. And he's basically the guy you send in to take care of people you need to get rid of.
Nice.
And he works for the Empire. It's kind of interesting. I think they go a little too much for the Bond-esque part of it. And when I say Bond-esque, they're more of the Roger Moore, less of the Sean Connery.
Oh, God.
Yeah, you know. It's,
so it's like real cheeky.
Yeah, a little that way, and I feel like they need to go more Connery if they're going for Bond.
So he's kind of like the Emperor's hand.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, wow.
You know, he's set up whenever there's a high profile, like a Moth, or something that needs to be taken out, and you need it to be on the hush-hush and everything like that. And I think it's interesting that they did set it in that period because the Imperial Senate is still around, so you know that you know, you're like, okay, well, you know, just send Darth Vader there to kill him and, you know, everything's great. And, well, no, there's still some politics into play that, you know, someone – it's got to look like an accident.
Right.
So, you know – I'm really intrigued to see how they take this. The first couple of stories have been pretty good, and mm-hmm. you know, I think it's got a lot of potential. So.
Well, what you're saying right there, you know, we see evidence of that in A New Hope. And I really cringe every time I use the subtitle because there was no subtitle.
No,
I agree.
But for discussion purposes, mm-hmm. you see that in the beginning when they take over the blockade runner, the Tantive IV, is that what it was called?
I think that's what it is. Very good.
That Carillion Corvette.
That's Jesus. Right. And so you see like that they talk about the Senate's not going to allow them to do what they're doing, and they end up making it look like, you know, it was some kind of accident mm-hmm. or blah, blah, blah. So you do see that they are kind of – their hands are still tied a little bit by mm-hmm. procedure. And it is funny to hear that like, you know, you can't just send Vader in to be like, I'm going to force choke every bitch in this room mm-hmm. until we get what we want. That is funny. One thing that we forgot to mention
uh-oh.
About the first Thrawn books, just to get back to the books really fast, because I feel like if we don't mention this, someone's going to mention in comments. They're going to be like, why the fuck didn't you talk about this kind of an important thing? In the Timothy Zahn books, there was a character named Thrawn, Grand Admiral Thrawn.
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with
who was a he's an alien. Now, the significant thing about this is Palpatine, it was very strict about, like, humans. He only wanted humans in any kind of positions of power, uh-huh. command. Mm-hmm. But that Thrawn was so promising and so brilliant that even Palpatine couldn't ignore the fact that it would be an advantage to have this guy as a Grand Admiral.
Yeah.
So
no small feat.
No small feat. And the fact that Thrawn is who discovered this this animal called the Silamiri, the Silamiri that would create force bubbles so you couldn't use Jedi powers on him.
Oh, interesting.
And he would start to like instruct his people that worked for him to also wear them so that way the Jedi couldn't fight against him.
That's
so
awesome.
Again, wanted to touch on that. I know we're running out of time, but I wanted to touch on that or else we're going to have someone in the comments who's going to be really obnoxious about it.
It's going to be at Manny Bothans on Twitter, by the way.
Exactly.
I just looked that up to see if that handle was available. Unfortunately, somebody already got somebody at Manny Bothans on Twitter, so kudos to you, sir.
So we're going
to
wrap this up. This wraps up our initial Star Wars trilogy. Jeff, thank you so much for sitting in and talking to us about this.
It's a wealth of knowledge, this guy.
Yeah, right? And I know even though this is the third of the trilogy, and Joel and I have talked about that, we are going to have to go and explore a little bit more.
Like there's
Just stuff that when we talked about the movies, we glossed over so much.
Yeah.
So we're going to come back and do some more specific discussion for it, and would love for you to come back.
Oh, sure. I'd love to.
Awesome.
Nice.
Joel, thank you for being a part of this thing.
As always, it's a pleasure.
And with that, we're going to sign off, and may the Force be with you.
You've been listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
That's fucking gold.